Game on 2FM. With Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
And a very good evening, Damien O'Mara and Ruby Walsh here with you between now and 7 o'clock. It's July 7th and this is Game On.
Coming up today, a busy night for Premier League action as Leicester cling on to the Champions League hopes. And Mark Langdon tells us if Barcelona can cling on to this lad.
Heads it through for Messi. Messi! Tucks it into the far corner with ease.
Astonishing in that left foot is like a big hypodermic. Crossed with a Stradivarius. And again, he curls this divinely with more curve on it than Jessica Rabbit. I tell you what, if Isaac Newton was watching this man, he'd be saying, boy, was I wrong. Astonishing from Lionel.
Possibly the greatest commentary clip that you will ever hear anywhere on the radio. Elsewhere, Gary Murphy is with us to chat Bryson DeChambeau, Ryder Cup and the golfing week ahead. Plus, we've Sarah Rowe on her life in the AFL and whether she'll be making more Mayo memories like this soon.
Curtis Shear. Push out the ass. Shots is lost. I'll shake Sarah Rowe. Sarah's Richard Spinner. Holy one, which is Spinner. Ah, Toshi. A dead no go make cool like it.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn 2FM. Damien, what about Jose last night? His players aren't going to win the friendly cup anyway, are they?
Do you remember, like, God be with the days when Spurs against Everton might actually have been entertaining. I went home thinking this is actually going to be a fairly decent game. And the highlight of it is Hugo Lloris and Heung-min Son getting pulled apart at halftime.
I know, yeah. An own goal was the only score in the game. I mean, it was difficult to watch, wasn't it?
It was poor, but like, let's be honest. Like, I don't know how many of these matches you've watched since things came back. I should mention, we do have live action as we speak. Harry Arthur has scored for Fulham. They lead Nottingham Forest by a goal to nil in the Championship. It's just kicked off a couple of minutes ago between Crystal Palace and Chelsea. James McCarthy on the bench for Palace. Watford against Norwich underway as well, and Adam Ida on the Norwich bench. But like, have we really had a scintillatingly impressive Premier League match since they came back?
I personally thought United's performance at the weekend when they managed to score 5 goals was bang up there. But that's my own biased view. I don't know. Whatever way you look at it, Damien, I suppose Liverpool winning the league was still a highlight. All right, an empty stadium, but, you know, 30 years on, it was still great as a sports person to watch it and see it. And that did bring plenty of enjoyment. But some of the games have been less entertaining, but they're running out the league and it has to be done, doesn't it?
And the surprising thing around all of this is that the amount of conversation I saw today, and even like Sky Sports have replayed this row. But so basically, for people that didn't see it, Heung-min Son failed to track back after losing possession, and Everton went down the pitch and had a shot on goal that Hugo Lloris saved. And at half time, basically, Lloris barged up the field to tell him what he thinks of him, and it continued down the tunnel. Like, the thing that has startled me today is the amount of people that seem horrified that fellas can play in the same team and not get on. As if it's like completely foreign that you might have sports people who line out week in, week out, but can't abide the sight nor sound of each other. These things happen every day of the week.
Yeah, well, I would have nothing against a teammate telling another teammate off. Granted, as Jose Mourinho did say, coming to his defence, it should have taken place in the dressing room, maybe not on the pitch, but there has to be passion in sport, and tempers are going to flare. Even Bryson DeChambeau has a temper that he doesn't want anyone to see, but everyone does have a temper. All right, there's a time and a place, and you're supposed to be able to keep it under wraps, but I don't think the keeper telling somebody off for not tracking back, I'd say he was right. What would Roy Keane have done?
I would say exactly the same thing, that if you've got that competitive spirit and you want to win, and Spurs will probably feel that they've underachieved over the course of the season, they're chasing Champions League football or certainly Europa League football at this stage, that he's well within his rights.
I would have said the same. Yeah. In other sporting news, Patrick Mahomes became the first $500 million player in the NFL.
Before we get stuck into that, Chelsea have taken the lead against Crystal Palace. Olivier Giroud with the goal inside the first 5 minutes. But Sky have put the mockers on Gary Cahill because they put this big graphic up on the screen a couple of minutes ago. Obviously, he's playing Chelsea tonight. All the trophies he's won in his Chelsea career. Ball played forward and he's clearly pulled his hamstring and pulled up, and Chelsea played on and basically buried the ball in the back of the net. The most valuable player, apparently, in world sport. come here, would you deny it to him? If someone tells you, I'm going to pay you X amount of money to play the game you love week in, week out, what young lad is going to say, no, sorry, that's overly excessive. Give me 200 million instead of 400 million.
I would love his injury clause. That would really suit me. He's an injury guarantee of $140 million in his contract. I'd have fairly cashed in on that one. But y'all didn't give me that.
But it's the same thing again. People are breaking it down. Like, this is how much you learn week in, week out. This is how much you learn by the year. But, like, do you remember at the start of the COVID-19 situation and people talked about salary caps are going to come into soccer and salary caps are going to come into this? And then you see a fella today, $400 million over 10 years. Big, big bucks.
Fair play to them. The Kansas City Chiefs are obviously rolling it. Manchester United have given Harry Neville, Phil Neville's son, who is a Republic of Ireland under-19 player, his first professional contract. Obviously, he qualifies to play for Ireland through his mum, Julie, in other news. And seeing as we were discussing Formula 1 yesterday, Damien, Fernando Alonso is going to return in 2021 with Renault.
Yeah, which is a big one because, like, obviously he's had immense success with them in the past. And this, I don't know, do you agree with this? There's talk of, you know, Formula One and they need big characters back in the sport, that they need big names along the way. And, you know, is it that important? Like, it's like, you know, you hear people with the same argument about, you know, the personality has gone out of hurling because they're all wearing helmets and none of us know what they're like. But surely, geez, if Formula One is that stuck that one driver is going to come back and save the sport, something's not right.
I think Formula 1 is like hurling. Hurling needs good hurlers. Formula 1 needs good drivers. Whatever their personality is, doesn't really matter once they have flair on the pitch or on the track or whatever it may be.
We've an awful lot to come on the programme. We've Sarah Rowe chatting to us later on about life back with the club and looking forward to potentially a return to the AFL with Collingwood. Gary Murphy will be with us to chat Bryson DeChambeau, the Ryder Cup and everything else. 51552 is our text number at GameOn2FM. We'll get us on Twitter. Norwich have taken the lead against Watford. They're a goal up after 7 minutes. And I suppose talking about big money contracts, we'll be getting the latest on Lionel Messi and his future with Barcelona from Mark Langdon after the break.
Game on, European football.
Well, if a half-time spat on the pitch is dominating the Premier League news in the, between two Spurs players, definitely dominating La Liga news is whether Lionel Messi will sign a new contract with Barcelona or not. Mark Langdon is joining us on the line. What do you think, Mark? Is he going to come to United? They're reportedly going to dig deep for him.
I'd be surprised if he went to Manchester United. I'd be surprised if he left Barcelona. There are clearly issues. It's well documented that his contract runs out in June 21. So, you know, Barcelona's president today has come out and said that they're obliged to give him a new contract. Almost, you know, we'll give him whatever he wants to make sure that he remains at the Nou Camp. And I think this is probably the latest kind of political play from Lionel Messi, maybe following in the footsteps of his great rival Cristiano Ronaldo, who did eventually leave Real Madrid, but not before he pretended to leave kind of every summer. It felt like, you know, when he'd get a Nou contract and more money. I think it's clear that Messi's unhappy with, you know, the way, the direction that Barcelona have been heading. But I don't see him leaving. I think he's just going to use this as a kind of, to make a political point and to make sure that Barcelona are challenging for trophies again in the near future.
Brazilian superstar Rivaldo is even speculating he might go to Juve and join Ronaldo. Surely that couldn't happen.
Yeah, I'd be amazed. I would be amazed if that would happen. I mean, it's expensive enough in the current climate to be able to afford one of those players, to be able to afford both in, you know, an era and climate where you've got financial fair play and the coronavirus. I mean, I think that would be impossible. There are only a few clubs that could even dream of affording Lionel Messi. You'd think of somebody like Manchester City or, you know, Paris Saint-Germain. It would cost an incredible amount. He's 33, still got a lot of good football, I would suggest, in him. And I think that's where the kind of the anger comes from Messi, that maybe Barcelona have wasted these last couple of years with him. You know, we've seen them crumble in the Champions League when they were beaten away by Roma, and then the same thing happened the year after at Liverpool. They looks like they're almost certain to lose La Liga title this year to Real Madrid. He's unhappy with the club, in terms of the presidency and certain members, I think, of the coaching staff as well. And some of the signings just haven't been good enough. They've spent the money, they've just not spent it very well.
But Mark, if we look at it, even you can date it back almost to that last Champions League success in 2015, that Barcelona has been a story of mismanagement at corporate level and political wrangling from then on in. And one would have thought the COVID-19 break would have given the president and the executive of the club an opportunity to get things back on track. But this is just the latest chapter in what has been almost a story of disintegration over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. If you have a look at sort of Champions League finals, they just haven't been to them in recent years. It's been a real struggle for them. Bartomeu, the president, has had major power struggles, with the fans and also with the players, even down to the fact that when the players announced, the club announced that the players had accepted a 70% wage cut during the coronavirus, but when there was no football, they still made the players out to be kind of the bad guys in all of that, which upset Lionel Messi. I mean, Messi never used to say anything. He used to he'd just be completely silent and let his football do the talking. This year he's complained about the way the club have carried themselves through that coronavirus discussions over wage deferral. He went on Instagram to call out the sporting director, Eric Abidal. He has disobeyed coaching orders only a couple of weeks ago, so clearly he's unhappy with what's gone on at Barcelona. And I think it's easy to understand why, because they have spent a lot of money. They received that Neymar transfer. They spent 100 million of it on Ousmane Dembele, who's been injured for most of the time. They spent another 100 million on Antoine Griezmann, who until recently wasn't getting in the team. He did return to the side against Villarreal. On Sunday, they signed Frenkie de Jong from Ajax and haven't played him in his best position. They got to a stage earlier on this season when they were so short of strikers. They signed somebody, Braithwaite, who used to play for Middlesbrough. It's been a terrible sort of run, like you say, of mismanagement. So Messi clearly unhappy, but if you just look around at where he could possibly go, I just don't see an obvious sort of destination for him. There's talk that maybe he'll end his career back in Argentina because he never played there, but I'm not even sure about that. I'd be very surprised to see him leave Barcelona, maybe right until the very end, when he may go to one of those kind of retirement leagues to top up the wage bill, when he's kind of completely gone at sort of 38 or 39 or something like that.
Well, Barcelona don't play till tomorrow night when they play Espanyol. Watford have equalised against Norwich already. And in Serie A tonight, Mark, Lazio are away to Lecce, Juve are away to Milan. Lazio have dropped 7 points behind, and there's a chance for maybe Juventus to seal the deal tonight, is there?
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame really for those that wanted a title race. Lazio were beaten 3-0 by Milan at the weekend. They ran into big suspension problems. Both of their strikers, Immobile and Caicedo, were missing for that game at the weekend, and it just seemed to kind of take the impetus right out of their team, almost as if they didn't believe that they could, win that game without those players. And they were duly hammered. And Juventus made no mistake in beating Torino. 4-1. Gigi Buffon broke the Serie A appearance record, 648 matches that the 42-year-old veteran goalkeeper now played. And Cristiano Ronaldo scored a free kick for the first time since he signed for Juventus 2 years ago. It was 43rd time lucky from free kicks. Nobody was sort of jockeying him off the free kicks. He was taking them until he scored. And finally, he managed to get one.
Mark, would they not just do the decent thing at this stage and fix away for Juventus? Actually, I probably shouldn't make a joke about fixing things when Italian teams are involved. But could UEFA not just, give Buffon the Champions League at this stage and let the poor man go off into retirement with the prize he craves so much?
Yeah, you definitely can't mention the word Juventus and fix same sentence. You get into big trouble with that one. I mean, it's the one thing missing from an utterly brilliant career. He's been unlucky in the Champions League final. It won't define him. You know, if he doesn't get to win it, he's still won a World Cup and numerous other sort of titles domestically. But it is still, you know, that one thing that's missing. I would suspect that even if Juventus got to the final, and there's still a long way for them to go to sort of reach that far, I don't think he'd play in it. I think Szczesny is ahead of him, the former Arsenal goalkeeper, in terms of sort of, you know, you can play Buffon in some of the league matches, and he plays in the Coppa Italia. If Juventus were picking their best 11 for a match, which is what they would do for the Champions League final, Buffon would be on the bench. But even then, I'm sure nobody would begrudge him sort of, you know, celebrating sort of John Terry style if Juventus win it and he doesn't actually play in the final, because over his career, I think it's fair to say he deserves the Champions League.
Mark, we have loads on tonight and we're a little tight on time, but Leicester, of course, are away to Arsenal later on. They've gotten their season a little bit back on track after losses to Chelsea and Everton, but they need to keep it up tonight against Arsenal, don't they?
Oh, they absolutely do, because in terms of that top four race, you know, Chelsea, Manchester United putting massive pressure on them. Arsenal probably playing their best stuff of the season, so I'd probably edge just towards Arsenal if they play like they did against Wolves on Saturday.
They have had 13 draws this year, Arsenal. The draw's not much good to Leicester, though, with the form United and Chelsea are in.
No, absolutely. I mean, you just look at the way that those two teams particularly are going at the moment, and the fixture list to come. You don't really see either sort of dropping too many points, particularly Manchester United. And, of course, there's that game, last game of the season, Leicester against Manchester United, which could become a Champions League kind of playoff. And Wolves play Chelsea on the last day as well. So you could have two matches that are effectively Champions League playoffs. But the way Leicester have played sort of even before lockdown, I think this has been coming for the last few months, they're just struggling a little bit to find their fluency, and although they've been in the top four for a long time, I think they may well be caught.
The scores are still the same in the Premiership at the minute. Chelsea are still beating Palace, and Watford and Norwich are still 1-1. Mark, thanks a million for taking our call. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you.
Game on. Check out the podcast on the RTÉ Radio Player app.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. 51552 for your text. You can tweet us as well. The address is at GameOn2FM. Now, as mentioned, we are joined by 20 by 20 and Lidl ambassador Sarah Rowe, who's helping to launch Lidl Moves, which is a new exercise programme, which is part of 20 by 20's campaign, No Proving, Just Moving. And you can get more details on their new website, which is www.lidl.ie/20by20. Sarah, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad. Thanks very much for joining us. I suppose, first and foremost, are you like a lot of GAA players and club players around the country at the minute, a renewed lease of life that you're back with the club and been able to get back to some level of normality?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a lovely time to be back at your club and, you know, that sense of community. I suppose normally you're coming from county to into the back end of club season, and the club team has been training all that time nearly as such without the county players. So to be able to start the season with the club players is lovely. You know, it's where we started and it's where we'll end. So I'm really enjoying that kind of, I suppose, that team camaraderie and the girls that I've been playing with all my life. So it's really refreshing to be back.
Sarah, Kilmore Moy are in the senior division this year for the first time, and you're in against Knockmore, Westport and, of course, Cornacun. Are you excited, a little bit scared, looking forward to it? How are you feeling as a group?
Yeah, we're absolutely excited. Like, you know, we went from junior to intermediate, now up to senior in a quick succession of time, and I think that's, you know, a real testament to where the club is going. And it's an all-girls club with, you know, a bit of Ardenry, a bit of Steve Knights and a bit of Bunny Conlon all joined together. So it's a real kind of town feel to the team. And I think we've been working very hard over the lockdown and, you know, trying to raise our standards to the level of senior football. And of course, that's the level that you always want to be playing at the highest level and against the best team. So we're looking forward to the first game against Knockmore. It's always a good rivalry between the two. So it'll be sure to be a good game.
When you think about it, having been in Australia and trained professionally all of last year, Have you brought something back to Knockmore, Mike? Can you add something to the mix?
Well, I'd like to hope so. Like, I normally am involved, as I said, this time of year. You know, I'm dipping in and out. But I like to hope that I can, you know, help raise the standards and, you know, even the culture of the team, because that is really important in any team environment, and making sure that the girls are close on and off the field and that we can all understand each other and get on well as a group. I think that's really important in a team success. So I think bringing that from Australia and, you know, standards and making sure girls are doing things outside of training, you know, it's not just about turning up to training anymore. There's so much more to it. And, you know, to look at it from a holistic view of, you know, your nutrition, your sleep, your hydration, like all of the other things, and also making sure that you're doing that bit extra outside of training to be up to the level that you need to be at senior football.
Just, Sarah, from a personal point of view, I know you've studied, not necessarily psychology, but you've studied how the mind works and all that type of thing. How important is sport and just that outlet at the moment, considered the isolation a lot of people have had and what's been a tremendously difficult time for an awful lot of people?
Yeah, I think with the mindset side of things, like it's life coaching and NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming and hypnosis. So I did that when I was over in Australia, and the reason I did it is because 4 years ago I went to a life coach myself, and I'd been to loads of psychologists before, but I just found her approach really good. I just felt like she was, you know, okay, let's reflect on the past and see where you came from, and you know, we are who we are because of the experiences we lived, and then you look at the present and future and what we can do going forward, because the only person we can control is us. So it's important to understand that, I suppose, and become self-aware that you control the way your mind works. And it's very relevant when it comes to sport, because, you know, you can train your body to be a certain way, but you need to train your mind as well to be a certain way, because, you know, there is so much highs and lows when it comes to sport, and to be able to manage that side of things is extremely important. And I think in every aspect of life, you need to use your mind, and you need to know that it needs to be trained as well to work a certain way. So for me, it's been a really enlightening experience to study it and now hopefully help others. I've taken on a few people recently, and it's been extremely rewarding.
Since you've started your new business, do you find some of your teammates trotting along beside you in training, asking you questions maybe they wouldn't have asked you in the past?
Yeah, definitely. Like, in especially over in Australia, a few girls were struggling with confidence, and they came to me and said, you know, is there anything that you can kind of enlighten me on? And, you know, one of the girls was saying that her mind was constantly telling her, like, she can't, and she's a fraud, and, you know, she's not good enough, and all those things. And, you know, I worked with her for a few sessions and just kind of got her to think a different way, because the way we think will determine the way we act, and then that will determine how we feel. So I kind of worked through a few things with her and changed, I suppose, the way she looked at things. So when she got selected for the team, she said she'd straight away think to the negative. So I was kind of working with her on how she can channel that voice. And we worked towards it, and she had an absolutely cracking season after that. So I won't put it down to me. I'll put it down to all her hard work. But, you know, it certainly does help along the way. And it's nice to have a bouncing board to just be able to talk to someone who comes from, I suppose, just a place of curiosity and completely non-judgmental. I just want to hear and understand where people are coming from, because we're all so different, and it's important that we understand the people around us. And to make a team work, we need to know our players, and we need to know, you know, some people need an arm around them and other people need a hard word. So it's to know that difference to make the team and the communication within a team a better place.
I know in my sport they always say that winners give you confidence. I always believed there was a lot more to that, because somewhere along the way in a bad run you had to ride winners and get going again. I always felt it was as simple as the ability to think in a positive manner no matter how bad things were going. Is it as simple as that, or is there more to confidence than that?
Well, yeah, there's not that much more to it, and that's the thing. There's simple techniques that you can just work on that can help you think that way, but it's definitely a huge part of it. Like, if you're going to think that you're going to lose, like, before you set out to play the game, like, you're definitely going to lose. Like, so, you know, the way we think will ultimately turn into the way we behave. So it is definitely, you know, that positive thinking is important, but sometimes people can't control it, and that's where, you know, you teach them to know that you're completely in control of yourself.
So how big a role then would something like visualization play in that? Like, do you starting out with the club now, do you have an idea, a mental picture of what you want the next 12 months in sport to be for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I always set long-term goals, but I break them into really small, you know, daily goals, because there's no point. You can get caught up in the outcome, and, you know, it's not about the outcome. It's always about the process. So, you know, it's to make sure that you break things down, and every day you're making good decisions that will ultimately better you in the long run. But that's what makes it easier in your mind as well. If you say, okay, I'm just going to do these little things every day and make sure I'm making decisions for me and for my team to be in a better place tomorrow. And then it takes the pressure off.
Visualise the round robin in the All-Ireland series. You've beaten Armagh, you've beaten Tyrone, you top your pool, and you're facing Dublin in the semi-final. What way do you see that?
Yeah, you would. You definitely visualise and think, I suppose, performance goals yourself as well. And I think that's important as well, because you can really get into the whole visualisation side of things. It definitely helps when it comes to game day. And, you know, sometimes the things that you think just happen to come true on the day, and that's because you've thought and believed it yourself.
So what's more prominent then in the visualisation at the moment, the red and green of Mayo or the black and white of Collingwood when it comes to career choices later on this year?
I haven't heard that question today.
There we go. For listeners' benefit, we joked beforehand that I was going to try and come up with at least one original question.
Yeah, that's a decision I suppose I can't make at the moment because of travel restrictions and all that kind of stuff. But by the 1st of August to the 17th, that's the window of sign and trade period. So that's when the decision will have to be made. But for now, there's, you know, everything's so up in the air for people in Australia and for people over here. So there's been no decision made yet. As of now, I'm looking to my club first and foremost, and then I'm looking to Mayo.
Sarah, I was looking this morning at quarantine protocols and restrictions in Australia, particularly in Melbourne, looking ahead to the Melbourne Cup in November, dealing with horses in Willie Mullins's. Can you see a way back into Melbourne for yourself right now, or is that going to be very difficult?
Well, it's hard to know, but like Mark Keane and Anton Tohill, who played for Collingwood, got back a few weeks ago. They had to quarantine for 2 weeks in a hotel over there. So, you know, there is ways, I suppose, at getting back, but it's whether the clubs want to get the Irish players back. It's whether they'll look, you know, inward to Australia or what they'll do. You just don't really know. So the conversations haven't been had yet, because I don't even know if clubs are able to have conversations yet. So that's just coming over the next few weeks. So I'll know more. I'll have more information in the next few weeks.
And obviously the state of Victoria is now going back into lockdown. Again, I'm purely thinking about the Melbourne Cup in November, but I think it's relevant to your own career. I don't know. I'm worried about, will we be able to get there for November? And I'm not certain you'll be able to get there in October anyway.
Yeah, that was the way I would have originally thought. But then when I saw, I suppose, Mark and Anton getting back, I was like, there is some way, somehow, they've gotten Irish players back out, and Conor McKenna, and then people were at home and then they went back again. But it's hard to know, and it's hard to see as well. It's like, when, you know, it's just not going to be as simple, obviously, to travel. And, you know, I always went out for a few weeks before Christmas and then came back for Christmas and then went out again. Like, you know, it's like if you go out, you're definitely not going to be coming back for a week or two here and there. Like, you're going to be staying out. So it's just not going to be as easy for anyone, I don't think.
And then that obviously presents a challenge when it comes to, like, it's been made definitively clear in Mayo that it's one or the other. So how difficult a decision is it to make? Because a lot of people would look at the dates and would say a player could be back in April and could balance it with the championship season.
Yeah, it's a tough decision, but it's like, I suppose what's best for Mayo is best for me. And, you know, I have to respect what we've been presented with, and I know that it's, you know, when we come back at the end of the league and we come into championship training, like, you don't, it's not great, like, coming back in kind of towards the back end of the season. Like, you would rather be there and give it everything for the whole season, and it's the same with the AFL. You know, you don't want to do anything half-hearted, so I understand that side of it completely. But I think it's going to be a hard decision, and whichever way it'll go, it'll be with a heavy heart either way. So we'll see how things go over the next couple of weeks.
Sarah, I know the ball is a different shape, but if you're coming off the back of playing professional or AFL and back into Gaelic football, is the transition that hard to make?
It is a tough transition in one way, Well, so when you go out there to Australia, there's no real expectation for you because you're new to the sport. You know, you're not, I suppose, expected to play a certain way. It's kind of like it's a bonus if you do. And then when you come home, there's a bit more expectation to be at the level that maybe you were or you can be. And so that bit's probably a bit harder. But, you know, the transition phase is like I feel like I've dealt with it a bit better this season because I actually know and I've experienced it myself. The first season, it was like, you know, I got myself into a place where I was fit and strong and all them things, but I came home and, you know, I hadn't done any, like, speed work or anything like that. Like, not too much. It's more of an endurance kind of based sport in Australia and, like, physical strength. And then you come back into Mayo and it's all fast twitch stuff. So to know that I needed kind of a transition period from one sport to the other was, you know, important. That, and it's probably something I didn't know last season, but this season I've kind of dealt with it in a different way and made sure that I was on a certain type of program because, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all. So I've had a lot of good people work with me on that going forward. So, and also, yeah, I suppose you have to get your ball skills up as well, and that takes a bit of time because you're just used to day in, day out kicking the AFL ball. But myself and Ashley Sheridan, the girl who was over there with me from Cavan, we just, every Monday, we just kick the Gaelic football, and that's something I didn't do the year before, but we just do it just to kind of keep somewhat of a familiarity with the ball.
Mm. Sarah, obviously, you're with us as part of your role as an ambassador with 20 by 20. There's the Women's Sport Australia, the WSA movement in Australia as well, which is trying to increase participation and promotion of women's sport as 20 by 20 are here. How does Ireland compare, do you think, with the work that's been done and maybe the impact that 20 by 20 has been able to have?
I think it's, I see similarities in both, and they're both really striving to improve the women's game. I suppose just the difference is one is professional, one is amateur. So they're obviously going to have a small bit more media coverage and stuff purely because, you know, the people around the office of your club are working there in the media team to promote the players and to promote, you know, the games ahead. So it's different that way. But all the same, you know, they're still striving for the same thing. And I think 20 by 20 and Lidl have done an amazing job over the last couple of years. And like Lidl especially, I've been with them like 5 years myself now, and the consistency is unbelievable. Like, they just continuously take action on everything they say. You know, they say something and they start to do it straight away. And, you know, a lot of people talk about doing things, but Lidl always take action. And that's the same thing with 20 by 20 now. It's like, you know, it's constant action. They want to see things happen. It's not about talking about doing things. It's about doing things. So I think their campaign now at the moment is brilliant because it's an holistic view of, you know, all women. It's not just about athletes, because it's physical activity is good for anyone's mental and physical health.
Well, Sarah, we wish you all the luck with Kilmore, Moy, Mayo, Collingwood, and your venture as a life coach. Thanks a million for taking our call.
Appreciate it. Enjoy the chat.
Game on 2FM.
So that's Sarah Rowe that was chatting to us about her initiatives, a busy woman. Plenty of goals going in the Premier League. It's now Chelsea leading Crystal Palace by 2-1. It was 1-0 when last we were with you. Christian Pulisic extended Chelsea's lead. But Wilfred Zaha, Ruby, potential goal of the season, or am I overstating it?
I think you've overstated it. It is a crack and it's a great strike and it curls into the top of the net, but it wasn't in the corner. Right? We've seen some great goals at the weekend as well. It was a brilliant strike. I just hope he can manage to get another two of them maybe.
Yeah.
And beat Chelsea. That'd be a great result for Man United. Then Arsenal beat Leicester later on. That's all we want from today, Damien.
Well, that's all you want from today. It's Kepa Arrizabalaga in goal for Chelsea. It's probably one of those ones, a shot from distance that he probably should have done somewhat better with. Norwich had taken an early lead against Watford, but that's 1-1 at the minute. And mention Harry Arter on the target for Fulham. They still lead Nottingham Forest by 1-0. Charlton 1-0 up on Brentford. Luton 1-0 up on Barnsley. And Reading and Huddersfield is scoreless in the Championship. A little bit of breaking news. You know, obviously, CVC Capital Partners, they've invested in the Pro 14 and they're investing in sport across the world. It had been reported that a deal with the Six Nations was about to be unveiled, or was certainly days away potentially from being unveiled. Six Nations have released a statement within the past couple of minutes confirming that they're in those exclusive negotiations, as we knew. But it says there's no set timeline for completion of the process in any agreement. If it were to go ahead, it would not be accelerated due to any potential challenge presented by the current external environment. So the Six Nations is staying as it is, Ruby, for a couple of weeks at least.
going to try it. It's going to try anyway, Damien. I think if they take the money from CVC, the risk of it becoming more than a Six Nations is probably on the cards, is it?
You would think, like, I'm all in favour of sports getting investment and everything else, but certain companies are only going to invest in sport to make a profit off it ultimately. It's the same way with people buying football clubs. They don't buy Premier League football clubs for the benefit of their health. Anyway, much more to come. We're going to chat golf with Gary Murphy after the break. Game on.
Golf. Welcome back to Game On. As promised last night, we'd said we would talk to Gary Murphy tonight about Bryson DeChambeau. He was a good winner in the end, Gary, but he has got a little bit bigger, hasn't he?
He certainly has, yeah. You could say that. He's certainly gone from... He's a flat jockey to over the jumps. Yeah, he's huge. He's put on, I think, almost nearly 40 pounds in weight. Probably a good 60-70% of it is muscle, and it's just transformed his game. He's a completely different animal. His form, kind of before the lockdown, was unreal. 3 top fives, nearly won in Mexico, and then he had that 3 months off, and he's just amped it up again. And since he's come back, he 8th was his worst finish before last week, and then he wins, and he won in Skyl, you know, with 3 birdies to finish under the pressure from Matt Wolff coming back at him. But it's just the manner in which he's playing golf. He played in the final round last week. He played with Troy Merritt, who's a really good, rock solid PGA Tour player who's had a good career, and he's just your kind of standard player, hits the ball a nice distance. And over the course of the 14 drives that they both hit in the final round, Bryson DeChambeau was 423 yards longer than Troy Merritt, which is essentially a good par 4. So that's almost like a 4-shot advantage over the course of 18 holes, which is aligned with his putting stats. He led the driving stats. Like the golden goose in golf is, if you can lead driving stats and putting stats, you're pretty much unbeatable. And that's essentially what he was last week. And, you know, it augurs really well for him coming into a season where you're going to have kind of majors backed up on top of one another. And then the final major of the year, there's obviously only 3 this year, but the final major of the year is going to be Augusta, and if he can bring that average of almost 350 yards off the tee, you know, around Augusta, I'm sure it's frightening the powers that be at Augusta National. And it looks like Bryson DeChambeau, you know, if he continues on this track, could be number one player on the planet fairly shortly.
Gary, when you have nothing else to do, bulking up and putting on muscle and power and strength is doable, but on with a PGA Tour and the schedule he has, maintaining it probably won't be as easy. Does he have the time to maintain it?
I think he really divides opinion, but the one thing that I would be in his corner for is the fact that, just that very point, Ruby, you know, does he have time to do it? He's 100% committed his whole life and soul to being the best golfer that he possibly can. And it's very few sports people, you know, I understand with Olympians and the effort that they put in is phenomenal, but from a golfing point of view, I don't think we've truly seen someone that is, even in his press conference on Sunday night, he was flying to Denver the next morning to meet his strength and conditioning guy to improve even more. So you can only have respect for someone that's prepared to go to the absolute, you know, limits of his capabilities in order to improve. I think that's what we're seeing. How long it's going to last, I don't know, because human nature will eventually, he'll taper off a little bit. And with the speed that he has, if he does start having a couple of loose tournaments and seeing a pattern of disruptive shots with that speed, because it's a bit like driving a car, you know, it's a lot safer drive within the speed limit. If you're hammering it down the whole time, eventually it becomes more dangerous. If he does get a little dip in confidence through seeing some particular shots, it'll be interesting to see how he will adapt backwards. But at the moment, it just seems to be stand up there, bludgeon it as far as he can. And like his average second shot into the holes last week was 107 yards, which is just astonishing distance, really. And he does seem like he's the hottest player on the planet at the moment.
Gary, before we move on and talk about the rest of the action and stuff from the weekend, has the reaction to his physical change surprised you? And there's no indication that this has been achieved through anything other than bread, water and hard work, but it has kind of dominated an awful lot of the discussion away from the action and probably only beaten by the situation surrounding COVID-19 testing.
It is. I think it's almost the only narrative at the moment, which is, you know, how long can they keep playing this story? I think it's a little unfair as well on other players, but it's something that we've never seen before, for someone to transform themselves so much and be so overly successful almost so quickly. But it has to be said, like, the golf courses that he has played so far really do help that. I think, you know, if you got him on a links golf course with a 25-30 mile an hour breeze and plenty of rough either side, I don't think he would be able to play the game that he's playing now. But the way the course setups are in the States, it really is perfect for someone who just wants to kind of bomb it and gouge it. But he deserves the headlines, because it's something. Lots of guys have tried this, not to the extent that he has, and have failed. So the fact that he's gone even further and has been successful, you can only really commend him on it.
In terms of other action from the weekend, on-course action, is Seamus Power second in your list of talking points or takeaways?
It was just heartbreaking, and unfortunately, that, you know, he's kind of at that stage in his career where, you know, every performance when he gets a chance to turn up and play in the PGA Tour has to be his kind of best performance, and that even adds its own pressure. And he just saw that a little bit late on Sunday, that he's just on edge trying to get the max out of his game the whole time, and he just let it slip a little bit, and it's difficult for Seamus, but he's playing on the hardest, you know, the hardest tour in the world with the best golfers in the world, and I still give enormous credit to him, the fact that he's almost there.
Gary, I know in racing or riding horses, if you start fast, it's very hard to maintain it. In golf, when you start as well as he did on Thursday, is it difficult to keep that up Friday, Saturday and Sunday? Is it a little better to start even and build through the week?
Oh, it is. I think, if we're not talking about the Derby last week, but I mean, how often does that happen that someone just gets out in front and stays there? You know, I think, especially in golf, the fact that, remember last year in Hilton Head, Shane Lowry had the lead, you know, until kind of late on Sunday. So he'd slept on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And the thing with golf, it's over 4 days. It is draining on you. We saw that with a couple of guys who weren't really involved in the tournament last week. And, you know, Danny Willett came in with a good final round. But there was no pressure on him going out, whereas Seamus, you know, had the intense pressure the whole way. And that just probably what told at the end. The very same with Matt Wolff. You know, he went 64-64. And just difficult to back it up again on Sunday. So it's a lot easier, I think, sneaking up on a lead on the golf tournament.
Can you tactically do anything about that before you set out on a Thursday?
No. Not really, because you're trying to shoot the lowest score you can every single day. It just doesn't work like that. You can, in majors, you possibly can, where you know that, not in a regular PGA Tour event where everyone's just trying to go as low as they can, as quick as they can. In a major, maybe in a US Open, you can have a different strategy to play for center of greens, and you know that maybe, you know, one or two under is a good score. But we've just seen it, even in these golf tournaments and the Monday qualifier every week, trying to get into it. Like Stephen Allen, a former PGA Tour player, an Australian guy, shot 8 under or 15 under his last two rounds and hasn't qualified to get into these events. So they really just have to hammer down. There'll be certain weeks where strategy will probably play more of a part, but right now it's go as fast as you can and see how long you can hang on for, really.
We'll talk about the Ryder Cup and will it, won't it, and let's be honest, I think it's widely accepted now within golf circles the decision has been made and the Ryder Cup won't happen, but we've European Tour action returning this week, the Austrian Open at the Diamond Country Club, and you look down the entry list and you see that the European Tour is again going to face a problem not only the lucrative nature of the PGA Tour drawing players stateside, but the fact that the PGA Tour has got up and running sooner and factor in quarantine. It's difficult to get overly excited about the Austrian Open this week.
It is, but there's, you know, there's always a kind of a different story at the bottom end of the ladder too. There's a lot of these guys, you know, have essentially been unemployed for the last 4 or 5 months with no income, and it's a huge opportunity. It's a dual event. Matt Wallace, who almost made the Ryder Cup team in Paris in 2018, 18 months before that, he won one of these events, which kickstarted his career. So you don't know how it can go for some of these guys. There's a couple of star players playing, not very many, but it really is a week where you'll see a lot of new names, and you know, you might possibly see a name come through and get that confidence with the win. And as we know, in sport, confidence breeds more confidence, and then anything is possible. But it certainly does show the disparity between in cash between the PGA Tour and the European Tour at the moment.
You look back across the Atlantic, Gary, at the PGA Tour, you have the Workday Charity Open. It's the first of 2 weeks at Muirfield Village even. You've got three of the top five players in the world playing. I mean, the attraction even for spectators is to watch there rather than here.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, this tournament was supposed to be the John Deere, and the PGA Tour have the power to go to Workday. Listen, we've got a week on here if you fancy it, and you've a prize fund of $6.2 million. Over $1 million to the winner. And as you said, it's still a pretty strong field. And it's an incredible field if you compare it to Austria. But it's just a little unfair on the European Tour at the moment, because they're two completely different tours. The beauty of the European Tour is you hop from country to country. Every week is a different week. And with COVID-19, that's probably, you know, the worst kind of tour that you could have. But that, you know, there's Irish interest in the States with Graham and Shane, but there's also Irish interest in Austria with Niall Kearney, who's one of those guys. He's kind of, you know, he's been at it since 2009 with not really having very little success. But the dream is still alive, and that would be success for guys like Niall Kearney and Gavin Moynihan and these guys, just to try stay on the road in these times, and hopefully financially in the next couple of years the tour will get better and stronger again, back to where it was, and they might possibly find through some of these events to get their way out on tour full time.
Gary, before we let you go and before we get some tips for the week, we won't get overly tied up in the conversation about should the Ryder Cup go ahead, because it's a case now of when they'll announce it rather than if they'll announce a postponement until next year. It gives the opportunity for the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open to come back into the calendar, but would do so 4 days after the US Open would finish in the States, which, if quarantine rules were to be as they were, it's going to be very difficult even to see some of the marquee Irish players work both events into their schedule unless some level of dispensation is given with regard to quarantine.
Yeah, and I think the whole thing with quarantine, not that I'm the one to run the health advice, but you know, if these guys come in and land and get tested and they're clear, I really don't see an issue with it. If that's going to be the case, hopefully things can stay as they are at the moment, and come September we might be in a stronger place. But as you do say, we're so blessed to have such marquee home players, and if they're at a US Open the previous Sunday, to get back to Ireland for an Irish Open doesn't seem likely at the moment. And can you really have a tournament of the calibre and stature that the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open is without the likes of Rory and Shane and Porrick and Graham McDowell and those guys? I'm not really sure if that would be a big selling point for whatever course does decide to take it. It's because the year has been so difficult, we're kind of crying out for some kind of live sport in Ireland, but at the moment it looks very difficult to see if that event does happen, will it be anything like the level that we would want it to be?
I'm sure there are plenty of people who would love your take on quarantine rules, especially Michael O'Leary. Gary, you tipped us Danny Willett last weekend. What have you got for us this week?
And Adam Hadwin, Ruby. Come on. There was two of them.
Sorry, Gary. It was just a minute. I only had a few quid on Danny, so I forgot about Adam.
I think Matsuyama of the favourites is a good pick. He's short now. He's only 14. And Mark Leishman at 45 is probably a bit of better value for a place. And then my Hail Mary outsider is Emiliano Grillo, who's about 100 to 1. So they're my three tips this week.
Kerry Murphy, thanks a million. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, lads. Game on 2FM.